From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Yo, yo, what is up, beautiful people? Hey, happy April 9th, 2015. Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Man, do we have one fantastic show in store for you, or what? Well, today's show, just like we do each and every Thursday here on Current Sports Radio, we give you a sneak peek into the night's Current Sports TV interview. And of course, I had the privilege of sitting down with the Big Ten Hockey Player of the Year, also Big Ten Goaltender of the Year. I mean, he had so many accolades, folks, this season. Unbelievable kid by the name of Jake Hildebrand, of course, of the MSU hockey team. You'll get to hear that chat in just a sec. We'll also be chatting about the Tigers. We'll have Throwback Thursday for you. And college hoops hurting the NBA? That's according to, of course, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban. We'll discuss those comments as well as take your calls all throughout this hour, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners again for this April 9th. Let's begin things with the Detroit Tigers, shall we? Anibal Sanchez followed David Price's lead and put in an excellent performance to lead the Detroit Tigers to an 11-0 whooping of the Minnesota Twins. The starting pitcher allowed no runs on three hits, struck out six, and walked two. Now, the bottom of the lineup continued to deliver with Alex Avila and Jose Iglesias combining to go for 5-for-5 with four walks. The Tigers improved to 2-0 on the year and are back in action today. How about this news? Detroit Pistons have officially missed the NBA postseason. No surprise there for a sixth consecutive year. How about that? The Pistons lost to the Boston Celtics 113-103 last night. Isaiah Thomas had 34 points on just 17 field goal attempts and added six assists. For the Pistons, Andre Drummond, Greg Monroe, and Reggie Jackson recorded double-doubles, but it wasn't enough to overcome the Celtics going 33 of 34 from the free throw line. That's called efficiency, folks, compared to Detroit's 6 out of 10. And Tayshaun Prince, he became the eighth player in franchise history to score 10,000 points in a Pistons uniform. Now, Prince scored 15 points, giving him 10,004 of his 11,049 NBA points as a Piston. The four joins Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, Bob Lanier, Dave Bing, Bill Laimbeer, and Rip Hamilton as the franchise leaders in points. All right, the Detroit Lions, after losing Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, and C.J. Mosley this offseason, the Detroit Lions could lose another top performer of its vaunted defensive line. Now, defensive end George Johnson signed an offer sheet with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for 3 years and $9 million. Now, the Lions have 5 days to match the offer or watch Johnson join the Bucs. The veteran had a career year in 2014, recording six sacks for Detroit. If the team allows Johnson to walk, the Lions will not receive any compensation in return. That's not good news, huh? All right, folks, and I'm just now getting back to the WKAR Current Sports Radio Studios, seeing as though Tom Izzo held his end-of-the-year press conference at the Breslin Center. Now, Tom told members of the media this morning that despite the team's blowout loss in the Final Four, he feels great about the year. Izzo said this team will serve as a standard bearer for future MSU teams in terms of effort and desire. Now, the coach touched on various topics, including that MSU is looking at a preseason trip in August to play some exhibition games in Italy, but that it has not been finalized. All right, according to ESPN, former Michigan State tailback Le'Veon Bell, the Big Ten's 2012 rushing champion, now, of course, with the Pittsburgh Steelers, is facing a three-game suspension this upcoming year. Now, Bell was arrested, of course, late August during a traffic stop after police found 20 grams of marijuana in the vehicle. Bell was charged with driving under the influence and possession. Now, ESPN says Bell will appeal the suspension. All right, Los Angeles Dodgers slugger Adrian Gonzalez set a Major League Baseball record yesterday by hitting 5 home runs in the team's first 3 games. Gonzalez, who had gone 3-for-5 with a home run in each of the Dodgers' first 2 games against the San Diego Padres, homered in his first 3 at-bats in Wednesday night series finale. How good is that, right? Now, each of Gonzalez's home runs on Wednesday were a solo shot. He led the major leagues with 116 RBIs in 2014. That's impressive stuff from Adrian Gonzalez. My good, that man is good. All right, well, Indiana Pacers forward Chris Copeland is recovering in a New York hospital after a Wednesday morning stabbing incident. But Copeland issued a statement on Thursday to thank those who have shown support during this time, saying, quote, "I just want to thank everyone for their well wishes and prayers. I'm overwhelmed with the outpouring of support. I look forward to coming back stronger than ever. Thank you." Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know the number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave me a comment there. I'll read it live here on the air. And even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. So, without further ado, how about we start the show? All right, folks, so glad you have allowed Current Sports to be a part of your Thursday afternoon. I'm feeling good, even though it's a little rainy outside. And actually, today is the date for the unofficial start, I should say, for the Lansing Lugnuts season, seeing as though, of course, they have they like to open things up with a fun exhibition game called the Crosstown Showdown, where the MSU men's baseball team takes on the Lansing Lugnuts down at Cooley Law School Stadium. But the weather does not look good right now, folks. Looking at the forecast, actually, yesterday, rain is to be expected throughout much of the afternoon, leading into the evening. It's a little just yucky right now. And I believe the Detroit Tigers, they are in a rain delay as we speak. Of course, they are trying to close things out right now with the Minnesota Twins in that series. And I believe everything is on hold right now when it comes to the Detroit Tigers game against Minnesota. So it's right now delayed. Right now, we don't know. Official word has not come from Cooley Law School or the Lansing Lugnuts organization concerning tonight's Crosstown Showdown. But if it does, again, we will let you know throughout this hour. And if not, it's very convenient just to follow the Lugnuts on Twitter, as I'm sure they will make that announcement via social media. Also, I'm pretty excited today. Not only is it Thursday, the end of the week is nearing. I really hope I get to go out to the Crosstown Showdown to cover that game later on. But if not, hey, I will be glued to my TV nonetheless because, of course, the Masters is taking place right now. Of course, Tiger Woods making his golf, return to golf, I should say, after taking an elongated time off to get his mind right and to get back on track. Of course, he tees off at 1:48 p.m. Eastern time, so near the back half of this hour. Really interesting to see whether or not Tiger can return back to form, but I love the Masters. I mean, the Masters is like the Super Bowl of golf, right? So definitely exciting about that. And of course, I'm excited about today's Current Sports Show. Again, we'll be playing my sit down with Jake Hildebrand. Jake was fantastic last night as he sat down with me on Current Sports TV, and he talked about his incredible year with the MSU hockey team. Of course, he is the reigning Big Ten Player of the Year. He was also named Big Ten Goaltender of the Year, and one pretty impressive season for Tom Anastas in this squad. I mean, I tell you what, the complete 180 that this team made during the second half of the year to possibly, if they would have swept Michigan during those last 2 games of the year, my goodness, we'll be talking about Big Ten champion right now. I mean, that's unbelievable. They could have possibly won a Big Ten championship if they would have swept U of M. Of course, they end up splitting that series, winning one of the 2 games. But a fantastic outing. I mean, of course, they met up with Michigan in the Big Ten tournament and fell out very short of possibly competing in a Big Ten tourney championship game. And of thus, making them ineligible for, of course, the NCAA tourney as a whole. in which Union was able to call themselves national champions. But a fun year nonetheless. I mean, you're starting to see glimpses with Tom and his team that, hey, they're not too far of really breaking down the door and being a competitor, I should say, in the NCAA tourney. So they ended up finishing, actually, when you look at the Big Ten Conference as a whole, they finished in that number two spot with Minnesota taking the reins at number one and, of course, Michigan at number three. So we'll be playing an interview with Jake in just a sec. You do not want to miss that again, folks. Our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I do have one extended headliner for you all, guys. This comes from Michigan State, 247sports.com. Very interesting article because it's being reported that multiple sources have told Spartan Tailgate that former Missouri forward Jonathan Williams III is eyeing Michigan State as his possible next destination. Now, of course, Jonathan Williams III, he's a men's basketball player who is looking to transfer, and Michigan State is said to be among his schools that he is considering to take his basketball talents toward. Now, Missouri announced last night that Williams III, as sophomore, will transfer. Sources claim when Williams III submitted his transfer application, Michigan State was the school he requested to have contact with. Now, Missouri did not stand in the way on that front. It was reported Williams cannot move onto an SEC or a Big 12 school, Illinois or Arizona, as conditions of the transfer. So he cannot, of course, transfer to any school within the SEC, seeing as though that he was, of course, a player for Missouri. Now, reading right here from the article, again, on MichiganState247sports.com, it is saying that, quote, now it is a matter of the NCAA deciding if Williams III will be immediately eligible wherever he lands. Now, NCAA rules state that a player that transfers must sit out, of course, at least 1 year, but that can be waived. If it is not waived, Williams will sit out next year, but would have 2 years of eligibility remaining. Interesting stuff because, again, when looking at it, the Spartans really they heavily recruited Williams III out of Memphis, Tennessee, Southwind in the 2013 draft cycle. Williams III, he was ranked then as the nation's number nine power forward in the 247 Sports composite right here on the website. But, of course, he ultimately chose Missouri over MSU and Georgetown, among others. Alex, I want to invite now Alex Sharg, our engineer here of Current Sports. I mean, Alex, when you heard this news, and if you're just now hearing it, I mean, how surprising is this for you? Because I think if Michigan State does get this get, I think this could be a pretty big one.
Well, after reaching the Final Four, it actually makes a lot of sense. Michigan State now has put themselves back on the national Final Four stage and a very luxurious place for recruits. So I totally understand why someone would want to go to Michigan State and definitely transfer there, albeit the way that Missouri has played over the last few years has not been a tournament team. So overall, I think it makes sense that someone like this is interested. Now, from Michigan State's perspective, is this the right move? Well, you're losing Brandon Dawson. I know they have Aaron Harris kind of waiting in the wings for this season, this upcoming one. But still, I mean, a guy like Brandon Dawson, as much as he didn't really at times be consistent and as much as he was absent, as some would say, that's still a big hole to replace. And I think having two forwards like Aaron Harris and this guy, Williams, I think that will help alleviate that. And I think that if he gets the grant to play right away, boy, this Michigan State team is going to be definitely in the top 25 to start the year.
Oh, you could argue maybe top 10. You know what I mean? I think looking at this squad, first off, to your point about Brandon Dawson, I think Brandon Dawson was a guy who certainly, again, he was such an athletic guy. I actually asked Izzo today in today's presser, whether or not, you know, Graham Couch's Lansing State Journal asked about Brandon Dawson. I asked about Travis Trice, but Tom touched on, you know, the basketball future of those two. And he talked about how Brandon Dawson, he definitely feels as though there is a spot on an NBA roster for BJ somewhere because he's athletic. He works his butt off. Izzo did admit that, you know, sometimes, you know, he would have liked to see a little bit more from Brandon Dawson. But overall, you know, it was a very solid career for BJ. So, yeah, that is definitely a hole and a void that Michigan State will certainly have to fill next year. And I think when looking at this kid, I mean, Williams III is 6'9". He's 225 pounds. With Missouri, he led Missouri in points, 11.9 points last year, 7.1 rebounds per game last season as well. I think he's a guy who can come in and make an immediate impact. Now, whether or not the NCAA will waive that first year, of course, him sitting out after the transfer, I think, I don't know, man. First off, when this story came out, the first question that naturally comes to your mind is why Jonathan Williams III is transferring. So that's the first question. I don't know, maybe if it's personal reasons, because all of that takes into account whether or not a player will be eligible and would not have to sit out after that first year of transfer. We saw with Brent Forbes, when he transferred from Cleveland State, it was due to personal reasons. The NCAA took that in consideration and said, okay, this is obviously for personal reasons here. We're going to waive the clause. He'll be able to play during that first year of eligibility when he transfers. So with this situation, who knows? But either way, I think if they do land Williams III, I think this could be a definitely a big get for this team. And it's very interesting to see how all this pans out, though. And whether or not Tom touched on this morning, if you want to know, no, he didn't even touch this story at all. And I don't think he can, because you don't know if anything is set in stone right now. No one even asked the question in the first place. So there you have that. But very interesting story, though.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. And the other question is, with Bryn Forbes, he originally is from Lansing. So for personal reasons, maybe he wanted to be closer to his family, or maybe there was something going on back at home and he had to be there. So for him, it makes sense. Jonathan Williams III, he's not from Lansing. So that's kind of why I don't have a good feeling that if he decides to come to Michigan State, I don't have a good feeling that he will play right away. I think he'll have to sit out unless there's some unforeseen circumstance that we don't know. But at the first look of it, I don't anticipate him playing. But either way, Aaron Harris, man, I mean, that's a guy that really has not been talked about a lot. A lot of people were very excited to hear that he was coming here, a standout player. Not that Bryn Forbes wasn't at Cleveland State, but at West Virginia, Aaron Harris was the front court leader of that team and easily took them very far in the NCAA in many games during the year. So I think that Aaron Harris is going to come in. I think he has a lot of NBA potential. A lot of people haven't seen him yet, but if you look at his game tape, he has the playmaking ability. He's a scorer. He's dynamic. He's big. He's got a body to him. So I really think that he's going to be pretty decent. And lastly, Al, Travis Trice, what did Izzo say about him?
Yeah, Trav, I mean, you know, when I asked Izzo what's the NBA future look like for Travis Trice, Izzo immediately brought up the fact that Izzo was actually right there, I believe, you know, right, maybe front court. I don't know. I didn't really see the game last night, but I don't know. Maybe he was sitting front court. But he was at the game, the Pistons and Boston Celtics game last night, and he talked about how, you know, he looked at guards like a John Lucas III, like an Isaiah Thomas who threw up 34 points, and he kind of, you know, looked at those guards and looked at the overall game and said, man, I could see possibly, you know, Travis Trice competing at this level. Now, whether or not that will happen, well, it's still yet to see. He basically said, you know, you just have to wait and see. He'll know more in a couple weeks to see where his draft stock is when he talks to different NBA personnel across the board. But, you know, he doesn't think that Travis Trice's years of basketball are done whatsoever. I think Travis Trice is a guy who's going to try to come in, possibly work out for a few teams here and there, maybe compete in the NBA Combine. Who knows how much weight that holds, though. But he does see Travis Trice playing somewhere. Maybe it's overseas. Maybe it's in the D League. Who knows? I think at the end of the day, I think Travis Trice is a guy that physically has to get stronger. I think he has the intangibles of, you know, he's got the mindset, he's got the focus, he's got the work ethic to do so. It's just about, you know, fine-tuning his game a little bit. We've seen players that weren't that highly touted coming out of college and were second-round draft picks, some even coming through the D-League, you know, repertoire, I should say. A guy who really stands out to me in that whole conversation is a guy like Damian Lillard. And then look at Brandon Jennings, who played overseas and then was able to come back to the NBA and have success. But as far as Tom Izzo's viewpoint on Travis Trice goes and his basketball future, he does not think that Travis Trice's basketball days are in back of him now. So we'll see, though. Very interesting stuff. Folks, again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And, of course, you know, Tom Izzo, he held his year-end presser. What I love about Tom Izzo's year-end presser is not only does, of course, he put a bow on the season and us media members get to fire questions out at him about the year, what the year meant to him. And this year's so special. I mean, the improbable run to the Final Four. Tom Izzo talked about how this was really one of his more memorable years because of that. He also touched on the fact that just to raise a banner, looking at the group of kids that he had this year, not to diminish their talent, because this team certainly, you know, bought in to Tom Izzo's philosophy. The chemistry was there. Not to diminish their talent on the court, because this was certainly a talented bunch. But when you compare this year's Final Four team to the rest of Tom Izzo's Final Four teams, This, you can argue, was the least talented. And this was the most unexpected run to a Final Four. So he talked about how much that means to him to raise a banner and to his kids to raise a banner this year. That is certainly something that he also touched upon. But it's really cool because you get to, you know, Tom Izzo puts a bow on the season. But afterwards, you know, he just talks to you. You know, he goes off the record. Everything is off the record. So I can't mention the subjects that were brought up during that time, but it's really cool because you get to really dive into Tom Izzo's mind state, and you know, you get away from the coach speak a little bit, and he's just real with you, and that's what I really love. And you know, Tom and I actually had an interesting banter, back and forth about the one and dones in the when it comes to the college game, and he had a very interesting take. Of course, it's off the record; I can't tell you what he said, but it was a very healthy conversation nonetheless, and I'll hopefully look forward to possibly sitting down with Tom one-on-one during the offseason when, of course, the recruiting trail slows down for him, which never slows down, let's be honest here, but we hope to bring a pretty cool feature in that regard, in that conversation to Current Sports TV, so definitely keep it locked for that. But, you know, he talked about a bunch of things. You know, he talked about how Denzel Valentine and Lou Rawls Tum Tum Nairn Jr. are going to be the clear leaders for this team next year. And, you know, he sat down and had a meeting with his freshman this morning, and or his first-year players, I should say, and he asked them, I mean, was that run to the Final Four everything you would expect it to be? And, you know, he talked about how Javon Best said, and this is a guy who didn't even play. Javon Best was hurt. And Javon said, man, coach, that was everything and more. You know, that exceeded my expectations of what I thought it would be. So that was very, very cool. And, you know, Tom Izzo, he wanted to say, quote, maybe, this is a team that really worked hard and brought everything to the table. And this, again, as I said in the Quicker Headliners, I mean, Tom talked about how this is a squad that when he does his different talks at different camps and different events here and there, he will mention this squad and the improbable work ethic that they had to accomplish something that didn't seem accomplishable throughout the year. His team did not buy into that. Even though they had the losses to Texas Southern, the conference losses, the one to Minnesota was real, real bad. This team still believed that, hey, they could turn things around, and they bought into that. So Tom Izzo referred to this team as a team that he will constantly bring up, that when your back is against the wall and people think that you won't do something, don't listen to it. Keep working your tail off to accomplish a dream. And that's exactly what this team did. So it was very, very cool to see, you know, Tom talk about this squad. He also mentioned officiating in the league. I know we had a few callers, earlier on this week about specifically, I remember Mike from Saginaw called and he talked about the officiating throughout the tourney and how it wasn't consistent. It wasn't great at all. And, you know, Izzo, you know, he talked about on officiating, you know, not to get himself in trouble here, but he said that, quote, I feel bad for all parties, the players, the coaches, and the fans. He feels bad because, I mean, when you have inconsistencies in the way the game is called, that opens up a whole can of worms. And it doesn't look good for the branding of college hoops. People still watch. Don't get me wrong. I mean, this year's tourney was amongst the highest rated of any tourney there's been. But at the same time, you have to recognize what things could better your brand. And if the officiating as a whole isn't there, then hey, it turns people off. It definitely turns, and it angers people at the end of the day. So definitely feel Tom Izzo's pain on that. He also was asked about Gavin Schilling. And where his potential lies, how high is his ceiling, if you will. And when asked about Gavin Schilling, he said that, quote, my honesty will get me in trouble, but Gavin has to fall in love with the game. That's exactly what Tom talked about. Because I think Gavin Schilling, when you look at him, he's an athletic guy. He's a guy, you know, comparing his game to that of a Brandon Dawson's, I think he's a garbage man. You know, he gets those scrappy rebounds. He's incredibly athletic. We've seen him throw down countless tomahawk dunks and two-handed dunks. He's great in transition, I think. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it gets to some point sometimes throughout a game where Gavin Schilling is just out there. He's just another body. And he seems to not be in tune fully, you know, mentally with the game throughout an entire 40 minutes. So, again, Izzo on Gavin Schilling, quote, my honesty will get me in trouble, but Gavin has to fall in love with the game. Meaning, you know, he's got to work for it. You know what I mean? He's got to be in the gym. He's got to become a gym rat to fine-tune his game and become a next-level player. So I found that to be very, very interesting. Also, Matt Costello, Tom talked about how Costello was going to get his knee examined, and he felt as though there's going to be some definite cleaning up of Matt Costello's knee. So maybe some surgery coming, surgery news when it comes to Matt Costello down the line. Pretty much that's, the big takeaways. Those were really the big takeaways for me when it came to Tom Izzo's end of the year presser. But it's such a cool moment because not only does he hold the presser, but he has a moment where he just goes off the record, unfiltered Tom Izzo. And again, it was a very healthy conversation for not only Tom, but us as media members as well, to getting really just to pick Tom's brain on multiple facets to the college and even pro basketball game. It was very, very healthy. So I really appreciate Tom for doing that. He is one of the most, you look at other programs and other coaches around the area or just in the nation. I always say Michigan State does allow us media members unheralded access that you won't normally get at other schools. And I really appreciate it. And for Tom Izzo, he's a Hall of Famer, folks. And the way Tom is so personable throughout his press conferences, he goes like 2 hours. I love that. And that's something about Tom that you don't get with other coaches. It was definitely a fantastic time being down at the Breslin Center this morning. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before we hit our first break here, I briefly want to talk about the Detroit Tigers. Now, of course, the Tigers had a big win over the Minnesota Twins, 11-0. Just a good old-fashioned just spanking last night of the Minnesota Twins. Anibal Sanchez, of course, he followed up David Price's fantastic opening day and put on an excellent performance of his own to lead the Tigers to that 11-0 victory over the Twins. The starting pitcher allowed no runs on 3 hits, struck out 6, and walked just 2. Now, the bottom of the lineup continued to deliver with Alex Avila and Jose Iglesias combining to go for 5-for-5 with 4 walks. The Tigers improved to 2-0 on the year and are back in action right now as we speak, but the Tigers are in a rain delay. It is coming down like cats and dogs right now in the city of Detroit. But other news also broke concerning the Tigers' closer, Joe Nathan. Now, Joe Nathan, it was said that when he was brought in to relieve David Price of that opening day game to seal the deal for the Tigers in that game one against Minnesota, it was said that Joe had some, he was just real uncomfortable. I believe it was his right elbow that was giving him some problems. And, with that being said, the news broke yesterday that he will be placed on the 15-day disabled list. Now, Brad Ausmus expects, Joe Nathan to be out a couple of weeks here and there. And now filling in the role for Joe Nathan will be Joaquin Soria. So, Alex, looking at this change now, you got Joe Nathan out, a guy who I wasn't too high on to begin to start giving our season preview of the Tigers, I should say, because I've always said, I don't believe that the Tigers addressed the glaring need that has been a problem for the past four or five years now. I'm not too high on Joe Nathan. Again, he's injured right now. Joaquin Soria comes in to fill that void. What are your thoughts? Will this hurt the Tigers in any way?
Well, it definitely hurts to lose someone. And definitely, as much as Nathan wasn't really a very valued player last year, and when I say valued, I mean he didn't really put up great numbers. He had a 4.3 ERA. He gave up a lot of runs. You still lose Joe Nathan, you still lose a closer. But overall, Soria last year, when he was in the closing role, he didn't really perform that well either. So it definitely is a concern. However, I think you and I both agree, they need to make a move. Before the trade deadline hits, they need to acquire as many bullpen members as they can. Whether it's a closer, whether it's a mid or late relief, they need help in all of the positions. I don't think they can rely solely on Chamberlain, solely on Soria, solely on Kroll, and solely on the countless others that are in that bullpen right now.
Yeah, I really hope a move is made. And when you look at it, again, the loss of Nathan really just thins this already thin bullpen, in my opinion. Now, Bruce Rondon, on April 1st, they lost him to a bicep, sort of tendonitis in his bicep or something like that. Really interesting injury there. Rondon is currently on the 15-day disabled list. But, Jabba Chamberlain is somebody also that Brad Ausmus mentioned, and left-hander Ian Kroll as potential pitchers he could use in the eighth inning. Albuquerque is also in that mix as well. So, I don't know. We'll see. Joaquin filling this void now. Maybe it's a blessing in disguise. Maybe he comes in is efficient. Who knows?
But here's the other thing is right now, the Tigers have already pitched 2 shutouts, and the starting pitchers have gone 7-8 innings every time. And what I'm wondering is if there's increased pressure, you think, Al, knowing that the bullpen isn't that solidified, knowing that you don't have your number one ace, a.k.a. Max Scherzer, with you this year, I wonder if there's pressure from those other pitchers saying, hey, I better go late in innings this year because I don't know, one, what I'm going to get after, and two, we lost our best pitcher. I got to win 15 games myself.
I think that's always a concern when you talk about this Detroit Tigers teams. The last 2 to 3 years. I think when you talk about the starting pitching, which has been, again, arguably amongst the best in the MLB for the past, again, 4 to 5 years. And, you know, when you don't have a reliable bullpen, where you can't rely on somebody to come in and close the deal, seal the deal, again, as a starting pitcher, yeah, you're trying to go as deep as possible to make sure the guy behind you doesn't blow the game. So, yeah, there is pressure when you talk about that aspect for the Detroit Tigers. And again, you know, when comparing the old game of baseball to where it is now, I mean, for a starting pitcher to pitch an entire game, that was the norm back in the day. I remember we had Bob Every, chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. He's a big baseball enthusiast, longtime softball coach at Lansing Community College. Him and I would always talk all the time, even to this day, about how pitchers in the game today, I don't know why they just don't let the leash off of them and just let them pitch the entire game. But again, that's not how the game is today. I mean, managers and players alike are worried about wear and tear on their bodies. You won't see that. But again, if you can't rely on the next man up to come in and seal the deal of a gym that you have already pitched, then it's kind of unfortunate. You don't have a security blanket in that regard. So, and yet, to answer your question, yes, there is always pressure on Detroit Tigers starting pitchers because of the lack of a bullpen. So we'll see how this works out now. You know, Joe Nathan out now. Joaquin Soria, he's moving into that role. Albuquerque, Jabba Chamberlain, those are other names that Brad Ausmus also brought up. We'll see how bad this hurts the Tigers in the future. All right, well, let's hit our first break. When we come back, you'll get a sneak peek into tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down interview with Jake Hildebrand, Big Ten Hockey Player of the Year. After that, we'll also talk about the Masters, Rory, Tiger, Throwback Thursday, and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to Current Sports. Man, I never thought I'd see today we're playing the YMCA here on Current Sports. Shout out to Alex Sharg, engineer for Current Sports. He always mixes it up on the ones and twos. Welcome back to Current Sports as always. Again, I am your host, Al Martin. Phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Later on in the show, I also want to bring up this story because I found it to be interesting and comical at the same time, in a way. I don't know if you guys saw this, but owner of the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban, talked about the quote-unquote horrible state of college basketball and how it's hurting the NBA. Cuban said that he doesn't enjoy watching the college game, but his bigger concern is that the physical slow-down style that has become common in the NCAA results in prospects who are poorly prepared to make that jump to the pros. He went on to say, this is a direct quote from Mark Cuban here, quote, if they want to keep kids in school and keep them from being pro players, they're doing it the exact right way by having the 35-second shot clock and having the same game, well, I should say having the game look and officiated the way it is. Just because kids don't know how to play a full game of basketball. Interesting. Now, he went on to say, you know, just to read another quote here, quote, you've got three kids passing on the perimeter with 10 seconds on the shot clock. They try to make something happen, and two other kids stand around. They don't look for anything and then run back on defense, so there's no transition game because two out of the five or three out of the five, or in some cases, four out of the five kids aren't involved in the play. Wow. Interesting comments from, again, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban on how the college game of basketball is hurting the NBA. What do you think about Mark Cuban's comments? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. While we are taking your calls on that, let's play you a sneak peek of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with Jake Hildebrand, Michigan State, of course, star goalie, Big Ten Player of the Year, Big Ten Goaltender of the Year. It was fantastic having Jake in the house on last night's show. Special shout out to all of you who tuned in, came out for our Current Sports TV taping. Was not even expecting an audience, man, because we had pre-taped the entire intro down in Indy. That was definitely a surprise. Thank you for those who came out. But when I sat down with Jake, of course, we had all of our coverage out in Indy of Michigan State, the men's basketball team, Tom Izzo and company, going all the way to the Final Four. And, you know, I came out of that montage and I had to ask Jake, what goes through his head as a fellow student-athlete to see his fellow Spartans on a stage that big?
You know, I think it's really special with how successful the basketball team was, you know, this year. I think it makes, you know, us as a hockey team, you know, want to strive for the same success.
Did you guys gather at all to watch that game?
Oh, yes. We came together, you know, pretty much every game and watched it together. And, you know, we cheered on our fellow Spartans.
Now, the inspiration, of course, you just talked about, seeing, one of the squads here at Michigan State go that far on the national scene, the hoopla that ensued around here in the area. Of course, I don't need to bring up Cedar Fest that happened a few weeks ago, right? You as an athlete, and you talked about you and your fellow teammates. When you see something like that for the MSU hockey program, how close are you guys to possibly turning that corner?
I think you saw it in the second half of the season. During the first half, we struggled and we didn't get the start that we wanted. But, the second half of the year, I thought, we really turned the corner and, we're kind of spoiled here at Michigan State with how successful our football team's been the past 2 years. And, the basketball team, they're great every year. And, our hockey team wants to be there too.
And how about the women's cross country team too, right? A national title for them. The brand of MSU sports is one that is constantly evolving and one that is constantly successful, to be honest with you. What's that like for you, Jake?
You know, I think that was one of the biggest reasons I wanted to come to Michigan State. There's so much history here, with every sport that's here. Not only, hockey, there's football, basketball, you go down the line. I think, so many teams have won national championships, and, that was one of the biggest selling points for me. I want to come here, and I want to compete for national championships.
That is certainly true. And, of course, when you come just short, it obviously hurts. Of course, you saw Matt Costello just sort of break down in tears. That was certainly a tough interview to do. For you, as an athlete, because I know it's for me, I'm just a journalist. To go in the locker room and I have to stick a mic and a camera in someone's face after a crushing loss like that. As players, how do you bounce back from a defeat like that?
I think you use it as motivation. Every year after the season, we didn't have the first 2 years that we wanted to have when I was here. And I think that, leaves a bad taste in your mouth. And, you got to wait 6 more months to play another game. And, over those 6 months over summer, you just, you remember that feeling of the last game of the year because, only one team wins the last game of the year. So, after losing, I think everybody's just got to, strive for that success.
Certainly a great message now for you, Jake. Man, did you have one insane in the membrane year. I tell you what, Big Ten Player of the Year, Big Ten Goaltender of the Year. The accolades continue to come for you. One outstanding year for you and the MSU hockey team as a whole. For you, Jake, when you think about that, being Big Ten Player of the Year, is it hard at all to keep your head out of the clouds, so to speak?
I try not to think of it that way. I give a lot of credit to my team. Everybody knows a goalie can't do it by himself. And, our team, we played great team defense all year. And, I think that's was one of the big things that made us successful in the second half of the year was, how dedicated we were to defense. And, the whole coaching staff down the line from the head coach, giving me a lot of chances to play. And then, all the way down to, our video guy. I watch video with him every week. We go over everything. And, he was a goaltender, too. So I think that helps me a lot. So, everybody, I think I give it a lot of credit to them.
Jake, I hear that a lot with athletes, that video, watching video of your opponent and of yourself critiquing your game through the use of technology and video is so underrated. How big of a component is that to you?
Well, my first 2 years, I don't think I took advantage of it as much as I should have. And this year, we got a new video guy, and knowing that he was a goalie before, I think maybe I wanted to talk to him about things like that. And you know, I think that was one of the biggest things that, you know, helped me improve my game this year, was watching a lot of video.
A very interesting stat, Jake. Folks, since January 1st, Jake actually posted a 95 save percentage. That's unbelievable. That's actually tied for best in the country. What really clicked for you during that second half, Jake?
Well, I was really disappointed with my first half. I knew I could do better, and I knew I was expected to do better. So we went home for 8-9 days over Christmas break, and you know, I wanted to take a little break from hockey and step back and just think about things. And I think maybe that helped me a little bit in the second half to come back refreshed and, you know, have more confidence in myself.
So sometimes it just takes getting away from everything for you to sort of reflect and just relax a little bit, right?
I think that's a big part of it. I think that's why, you know, off seasons are so good for you too, because of how long the year is, and, you know, taking a step away from things helps you.
Playing the position of goalie is a tall order for anyone, Jake. And of course, you being amongst one of the best in the nation, do you feel at all that there's a lot of pressure on your shoulders when you're out there on the ice, or is that, I guess, pressure shared amongst you all?
I think that's why you become a goaltender, because you enjoy that. You know, every game you can make a difference in the game. And I think that's one of the biggest things that made me want to be a goaltender at a young age. And, you know, as you get older, I think you just get used to the pressure.
All right, folks, and also Jake held opponents to 2 goals or less in 14 of the last 18 games. Another crazy statistic just to throw at you. Now, you know, going back to your roots as to your hockey influence in life, something I found very interesting. Goalie coach Shane Clifford is listed as your idol and largest hockey influence. For those out there watching that don't know who Shane is, can you kind of give us a little bit of background?
Shane's a goalie coach out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's been a goalie coach for probably 25 years now. He's coached at every level, from the NHL, major, junior, NCAA to juniors, you know, the whole way down. I met him when I was 7 years old. I first organized hockey I ever played. It was a spring league, and you know, I talked to him after. And from when I was 7 to 16, I attended his camps as a goalie. And then once I turned 16, I started becoming an instructor at his camp. So I've done that until, you know, every summer since. So, you know, I think he's unbelievable. He's incredibly skilled at what he does. And, you know, I credit to him to a lot of my success.
What are some of the things Shane taught you over the years to hone you into the player that you are right now, Jake?
I think, kind of my mellow attitude, a calm confidence. I think that's, you know, one of his, he's very laid back about things, and, you know, a lot of movement. I think my athleticism, you know, comes a lot from his technique.
Are you guys still close today?
Yes. I went home last Sunday for Easter break, and I got to see him on Saturday, and I hung out with him for a bit, so that was great.
That is fantastic. Now, the origin of you when you first started playing hockey, when did you first start playing hockey, Jake, and how did that evolve into what it has become now?
I think I was 4 years old. My dad got me a couple plastic hockey sticks, and for a year I played inside, and I think they got tired of me breaking things, and he didn't want to play with me anymore, so they signed me up for a deck hockey league, which is, you know, on your feet, and then all the guys there started skating, so I kind of just went with them, and then they signed me up for that spring league where I met Shane, so I kind of, you know, just went from there.
When did you start playing goalie?
I wanted to play goalie from the beginning of deck hockey.
Okay.
Everybody had to rotate in goal. And when I went, I brought a baseball glove, and they told me I had to get out, and I refused to get out.
But you brought a baseball glove?
Yeah, I brought a baseball glove to play goalie. So I think my parents knew from then I picked what I want to play.
There you go, right? Yeah. That kind of was the peek into the window, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I want to talk about this year for you and the MSU hockey team. An incredible year, because I tell you what, Jake, I was following you guys all year. And around December, even November, I'm sitting there looking at the year, and I'm like, oh, okay. All right, well, this is kind of be interesting to see how this whole thing dwindles down. Then all of a sudden, the last 2 regular season games of the year, you actually had a chance to take on your rival Michigan. And if you had of swept Michigan, the Wolverines, you guys would have called yourselves Big Ten champions. Such a contrast. Again, going back to that first half to the second half of the year, I mean, what really turned around for you guys? What was the locker room atmosphere like from December on to, you know, February or March?
You know, I think we had it all season. I think we wanted to stick to the process. And, you know, my first 2 years, we knew it was going to be a rebuilding. And this year was the kind of the year that we knew we could turn the corner. We had everything we needed. We had experience. We had the skill. And I think we just kind of had to believe in ourselves. And, you know, after Christmas, we won the first game of the GLI and then lost that heartbreaker to Michigan. And, you know, ever since then, I think our team had kind of a swagger to them.
Who kind of held the glue? Who was the kind of the glue to this team? I mean, who kind of held things together and say, hey, guys, we're not out of this yet. It's still early.
Well, I think the captain is one of the biggest things on the team. Mike Ferentino, he's my roommate, and you know, he's an awesome leader, and I think he kind of gels everybody together.
Yeah, we definitely have Mike on Current Sports. He's a Current Sports TV alum as well, and now you can join that little fraternity, I guess you can say, Jake. Now, moving on now, I want to talk about Minnesota, because Minnesota, historically, every single year in the Big Ten is the team to beat. I mean, they're top dog. They actually went to the national championship game this year, lost to Union, but came oh so close. You guys, I tell you what, I mean, even though you lost to them twice, you tied them once, you got a big win, a 5-3 win, actually, in February against that team. How encouraging was it to see that win come to fruition, and how close are you guys to possibly hoisting a Big Ten championship?
Well, I mean, this year we were 3 points away from, you know, winning the Big Ten. You know, when you play teams like Minnesota and you realize how good they are and how close we played them, you know, all season, I think it just, you know, it makes you want to work harder, because you realize you're that close and you realize, you know, how good your team actually is. And you know, I think that definitely will help our team moving forward.
What makes Minnesota so good?
Their skill, very highly skilled, and they make a lot of plays.
Definitely. Now, playing for Tom Anazis also has to be something else. I mean, he is such a competitive guy. Very even-keeled, I will say that, when you look at him on the sidelines. How has he evolved your game and really instilled a lot of inspiration in this team?
You know, I definitely think all coaches have different coaching, you know, tactics and the way they do things. And I think he's very calm for the most part, and, you know, lets us, you know, kind of do our own thing. So I think he's definitely helped me a lot over the years. And, you know, coming in as a freshman, I wanted to play right away. And, you know, he gave me an opportunity to play, you know, my freshman year. And I think I kind of just ran with it. So I think that helped with, you know, how much confidence he had in me.
What do you think makes him such a special coach?
Probably the way he handles himself and carries himself. I think, you know, he does a, you know, tremendous job at that.
Definitely. You got a favorite Tom Anazis story that you can tell on the air?
Probably not without getting in trouble. No.
Really? All right. Well, Jace, you got a few more minutes?
Yep.
All right. Stick around, my man, because the 12th man starts right now. All right, here we go. It is now time for the 12th man, my favorite part of the show, where I stop barraging my guests with questions, and you get a chance, too. This week, we're going to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, even my Twitter page at AlMartinWKR, as all of you out there have some pretty intriguing questions, to say the least, for Mr. Jake Hildebrand here. You ready, Jake?
Yes, I am.
All right, I didn't give you any heads up on these questions.
No, not
just
at all,
random.
Nothing.
You ready?
Yep.
Here we go. First one comes from Scott from Midland. He wants to know, what was it like playing in the Penguins development camp last summer?
It was really special. You know, being from Pittsburgh and, you know, being a Pens fan growing up, you know, when I got the opportunity, got the invite to go to camp, I was, you know, just chomping at the bit. So it was a really great experience. And, you know, I met a lot of really great people. So I loved every second of it.
Got to love that, right? Getting kind of a taste of the NHL, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the ultimate dream, right? Because you'll be a senior next year. And then what? How does that, when you go into the draft and...
Hockey, it's different.
It's different, right?
Hockey, you have 3 years to get drafted, and if you don't get drafted, you can, you know, you play your years out of college, and then you can sign with any team as a free agent. So, I mean, sometimes it works out better that way because you have more options instead of just, you know, the one team that drafts you.
Exactly. So is the dream, the ultimate dream for you to play for your hometown team, the Penguins?
Yeah. I mean, that's been a dream since I was a little kid, but, you know, ever since I moved to Michigan, I've been here for 3 years now, and I think, you know, the Red Wings are, you know, and also an unbelievable organization.
Certainly. All right, and speaking of the Red Wings, we have a Red Wings-laden question for you on the next one. Sammy from Lansing wants to know, who should start at goalie for the Red Wings, Howard or Mrazek?
Well, you got to go with who's hot. So, you know, I think it's been really back and forth lately. You know, I've been a fan of Howard since I moved here. I really like the way he plays, but, you know, if your young guy's hot, you got to go with the hot goalie.
Who's your favorite goalie in AHL? Gotta ask that.
Fleury.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I've been watching him for a while now, so you know, I really enjoy the way he plays.
Okay. All right. Great question, Sammy. Appreciate that. All right. Carl from Petowski wants to know, is it your goal to win the Mike Ritter Award next year?
I mean, ever since the word came out, I think it's definitely been a personal goal of mine. It's not the, you know, the only goal. I think most of the goals that I have as a goaltender are team-oriented, because, you know, when the team's having success, the individual accolades come along with that.
No, that's the cliche answer you just gave me here, Jake. But I know if I was a player, I always try to put myself in your guys' shoes, which is a tall order to say the least. But as a player, I mean, to have the individual accolades, I understand you want to win. It's all about the team. But at the end of the day, do you kind of just sit back and say, man, I'm pretty good?
I don't think I word it like that, but you know, I think definitely a confidence I have in myself.
Gotcha. Yeah, I kind of worded it kind of narcissistic, right? I'm pretty good at this, right? All right, that's very interesting. All right, Jenna from Lansing wants to know, what was the main reason for your decision to become a Spartan here at Michigan State University?
Oh, well, I had two visits lined up for after coming to Michigan State. I was supposed to go visit Providence College and UMass Lowell. Two great hockey programs, and then you know, once I came here, I saw the campus, the facilities, and you know, my decision was pretty made up. Munn Arena, you see the banners, you see all the you know history on the walls there, and then the student athlete, the Smith Center, and the Duffy, the place we work out at. I mean, I think it just you know set me up to be successful not only in hockey, but you know, life after hockey with you know the whole student part of the student athlete.
Now, Munn, of course, being renovated, I mean, with the new scoreboard in the ring, the LCD ring around. I mean, just talk about the atmosphere at Munn, I mean, compared to other places you play.
It's unbelievable. You know, the fans we've had have been great, and, you know, the renovations that we're doing, I think, are going to make the fans' experience even better.
Yeah, that is certainly true. I tell you, folks, if you've never been at Munn Ice Arena for a game, you are missing out on life. All right, folks, last question here. Fred from Grand Ledge wants to know, which Big Ten team has the toughest arena to play in? Other than Munn, of course.
I don't think there's a bad arena to play in. You know, probably I'd have to say Penn State. My whole family is at Penn State, and you know, they had a bunch of signs behind me, and the student section goes up. It's pretty steep,
yeah.
So you can hear a lot that they're saying. So I think you know, Penn State was probably the hardest place to play, but I mean, it was also one of the most fun places to play too. You know, with their fans and things like that. And you know, I think every Big Ten school has that. Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. They're all unbelievable places.
And here in the student section, is it hard at all not to bite back during a game?
Some people, you know, it gets to them, but I kind of just try and enjoy the moment. I mean, if they're saying stuff to you, you're obviously doing something right, so.
There you go. That's I like that, Jake. Good message right there, right?
All right, yes, again, Jake Hildebrand. I mean, is he so poised on the air or what? Fantastic interview. Again, Jake Hildebrand, MSU hockey goaltender, Big Ten Player of the Year. You can catch that episode in its entirety tonight on Current Sports TV at 10 p.m. You don't want to miss it, folks. You also get to see all of our coverage out there in Indianapolis, Indiana, as we covered the Final Four. You get to hear from the players after the loss to Duke. We also had a pretty fun trivia segment we did out in the city, and just the sights and scenes of being in downtown Indianapolis. All of that and so much more on tonight's Current Sports TV at 10 p.m. All right, let's hit our second break. When we come back, it's Thursday, and we love to wind back the clock here each and every Thursday on Current Sports. We've got Throwback Thursday for you. We'll also talk about Mark Cuban's comments on how the college basketball game is supposedly hurting the NBA. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, here on this Thursday, April 9th. Hopefully you're having a great one, folks. Man, time flies when you're having fun. It's about 5 minutes left in the show. If you want to call in and give a quick comment on anything that we talked about on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. A quick update on the Minnesota Twins and Detroit Tigers game. It is in a rain delay as we speak. Not sure if they are going to push that game or not. No word just yet. But again, also, I mean, keep it locked to the Lansing Lugnuts Twitter page. As of course, I'm sure they'll be giving an update on their crosstown showdown tonight. The weather is throwing a wrench into many of your baseball plans out there. So keep it locked to that as well. But again, Tigers and Twins are currently delayed. Well, 5 minutes left in the show each and every Thursday here on Current Sports. We love to dial back the clock a little bit and see what exactly happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. We call it Throwback Thursday. Here we go.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman, back over his stick. Into the spot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Derrick Rice
Yes, you hear the montage. That means it is time for Throwback Thursday, where we take a look here on Current Sports at what exactly happened in sports history on this particular Thursday. Well, today is Thursday, April 9th, so let's check out what happened. In 1912, the first exhibition baseball game was held at Fenway Park in Boston. The game was between the Red Sox and Harvard. How about that? Back in 1912, the first exhibition baseball game held at the historic Fenway Park. All right, 1913, the Brooklyn Dodgers Ebbets Field was opened. So two historic venues, I should say, in the game of baseball, Fenway Park and Ebbets Field back in 1912, 1913. 1941, the PGA established the Golf Hall of Fame. 1945, the National Football League officials decreed that it was mandatory for football players to wear, get this, socks. Yes, socks, folks, in all league games. I mean, why wouldn't you wear socks during athletic competition in general? I just don't, that's kind of nasty, right? Okay, well, I'm glad they mandated that back in 1945. You don't want athlete's foot, right? Oh my goodness, all right. 1959, the Boston Celtics won the first of their eight consecutive NBA championships. How about that? We all know Red Auerbach and, of course, Bill Russell and company, Bob Cousy. That started that whole era. How about that? All right, 1965, the Houston Astrodome held its first baseball game. In 1987, the great one, Wayne Gretzky, passed Gene Beliveau as the all-time hockey playoff scoring leader. Pretty cool stuff there. In 2002, the New Jersey Nets won their first divisional title since joining the NBA back in 1976. And last but not least, also in 2002, Saku Koivu returned to the Montreal Canadiens after a seven-month battle with cancer. Now, the win against the New Jersey Devils clinched Montreal's first postseason position since back in 1997-98, that year. So how about that? A triumphant return for Saku back in 2002. Well, that wraps up your current sports Throwback Thursday headliners, folks. Interesting nonetheless. Really, the one back in 1945, that's pretty comical. NFL officials decreeing that it was mandatory for football players to wear socks in all league games. Oh, that's very interesting. Well, folks, really wanted to get to this one today, but we're going to have to table it for tomorrow's Current Sports, which is going to be a very interesting one, again, to say the least. Again, folks, if you haven't heard, Mark Cuban, Dallas Mavericks owner, has some choice words for the state of college hoops, and he believes that college basketball is hurting the NBA. I read two quotes from that article, which is again very comical. I have to get my point of view out there. I totally disagree with Mark Cuban 110%. And then he even talked about the referees in this article, saying the referees couldn't manage a White Castle. Wow, he's taking shots, folks. He goes and say, quote, seriously, the college game is more physical than the NBA, and the variation in how it's called from game to game is a problem. Hell, they don't even have standards on balls. They use different balls. One team's got one ball, the other team's got another ball. There are so many things that are ridiculous. Oh, Mark Cuban, okay. End quote. End show. Thanks for listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. We'll dive into that topic. Also, the Masters. Yes, the most coveted championship in all of golf. Right now, Charlie Hoffman and Justin Rose are tied at the top of the leaderboard at 5-under. Justin actually still has three more holes left to play. Tiger Woods is making his return to golf as we speak. We'll talk about that and so much more on tomorrow's show. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.